Dana Manicha, and I'm going to talk to you a bit about the factors that are related to people calling 911. And before I start, I'd like to acknowledge two of my co-authors who are here in the audience today, Drs. Barbara Dennison and Janine Jerskowski. So we heard a little bit about diabetes and cancer. Now we're going to talk a bit about stroke. Stroke is the primary cause of severe long-term disability, and in New York State, it is the third leading cause of death and a major cause of disability. In 2003, approximately 57,500 hospitalizations occurred that were due to new and recurrent stroke. Now, if patients are treated within 90 minutes of the onset of stroke symptoms, their chances of improvement are the best. Unfortunately, only about 20% of stroke victims arrive at the hospital within 3 hours. So there is this delay, but what's contributing to it? Well, there's been a couple postulations. One is that EMS response time contributes to it, but really that's been shown not to be a factor. From the time of a call to the time of arrival, the average EMS response time is approximately 34 minutes. So what we think is going on is that people are are delaying in identifying stroke symptoms. They're failing to recognize that a symptom, if they see it, requires emergency care, and then they're delaying in calling 911 or they're not calling at all. So we wanted to get a better understanding of what was related to people not calling 911 or related to them calling 911. So the purpose of this study was to examine the factors associated with a respondent's intent to call 911 for stroke signs or symptoms that they identify in themselves or another person. We conducted a telephone survey of adults in 4 New York State counties outside of New York City. The data was collected. Data were collected as part of a baseline evaluation for the New York State Department of Health media campaign, and we asked a total of 37 questions in telephone survey. The questions included demographic information. We asked about health history, stroke knowledge, and we included some decoy symptoms. Now, the health history variables, we were asking them about health factors related to stroke, what things that are putting them at higher risk. Do you have a prior stroke experience? Does your family member? Do you have coronary heart disease, high blood pressure? Those were some of the health history variables. For stroke knowledge, we asked people what they would do if they identified the 4 key symptoms that I've listed: speaking incorrectly, vision problems, uneven face, facial droops, asymmetry, or sudden arm weakness in themselves or another person. So we asked them a question separately: what would you do if you saw this in yourself? What would you do if you identified it in another person? And the decoy symptoms that we included were put in the survey to see if we had respondents who were just saying, I would call 911 to everything. And these were symptoms that would not necessitate emergency care. And we asked people to answer with 1 of 4 responses: wait, watch symptoms, and then decide, call a family member or friend, call a doctor or nurse, or call 911 or EMS in response to these symptoms. Our sampling method was a random digit dial telephone survey of households in the 4 counties in New York. Within each household, we randomly selected an adult 30 years of age or older to participate in the survey. And our requirement, in addition to age, was that all respondents spoke English. The survey was conducted by a national survey firm using the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System protocol. So we had a national standardized protocol. And the survey was administered between July 25th and September 17th, 2006. We had a response rate of 36% calculated using the American Association for Public Opinion Research response rate number 3, and that rate includes an estimate of the cases of unknown eligibility, which were actually eligible to participate. And the response rate we got of 36% is comparable to what's seen in the BRFSS response rate. We ended up with an overall sample of 1,789 persons. For the analysis, we weighted our data to the population based on age, gender, and race, and we also weighted the data for the probability of being selected to participate in the survey. We used the 2005 American Community Survey to create our weights for age and gender, but because one of our counties was missing race data in the 2005 American Community Survey, we had to use 2000 census data to weight on race. We conducted a multivariate analysis to identify the factors that were associated with somebody's intention to call 911. And our multivariate model included age, delaying care in the past year, living with another person, race, as white or non-white, gender, history of hypertension, heart disease, or stroke in the respondent or in their family member, and education and a prior experience with 911, which we defined as have you called 911 in the past year. We originally tested insurance in our model but removed it because it had no impact on the model. Overall, our sample was primarily white, well-educated, 40% had a bachelor's degree or more, and between the ages of 45 and 64. As I mentioned, we had removed insurance. Well, it may not have had an impact because 96% of our sample was insured. We had a high insurance rate in our sample. The majority were female. 11% had delayed, oh, I'm sorry, 11% had called 911 in the past year, and 32% had reported that they delayed seeking care for various reasons. And 37% of our sample lived with another adult. I mentioned that we asked about people's health history. 3% of our respondents had reported that they had prior stroke. 10% coronary heart disease. And in that category was persons who had a prior heart attack, bypass, or other heart surgery, an angioplasty or a stent. And then we had 36% of our sample that reported having hypertension or high blood pressure. We also asked, does your family member have a history of blank? And 16% of our sample had family members with a history of stroke, 34% had family history of coronary heart disease, and nearly half had a family history of high blood pressure. So when we asked about stroke symptoms, we asked, what would you do if you noticed? And here we have all the symptoms that we asked about, and there's inability to speak correctly, vision problems, and arm weakness in oneself or another person, and the last set of bars is facial droop in another. We did not ask our sample about facial droop in themselves because we thought that people would really be unlikely to identify their own face drooping unless they happen to be looking in a mirror or walking by a mirror, so we didn't ask that question. The dark blue bars with the asterisk, that's the response we want. These are all symptoms that need people to call 911. We'd like to see 100% people saying they would call 911, but obviously we didn't. And the other thing I want to point out is for the first two sets of bars, inability to speak correctly, you'll see that in the first set, almost 60% of people said they would call 911 in response to inability to speak correctly in themselves. But for another person, more people would call 911. And that's the same pattern we see for the other two symptoms. In vision problems, more people reported calling 911 or that they would call 911 for another person. And the same was seen with arm weakness. Vision problems, most respondents, if they noticed a vision problem in themselves, if they were having vision problems, reported that they would call a doctor or nurse, approximately 35%. And just a slight majority would call 911 for vision problems that somebody else was having. Again, respondents were most frequently reporting that they would call a doctor or nurse if they experienced arm weakness themselves, but the majority responded that they would call 911 if somebody else was seeing arm weakness. And then facial droop is the one that most respondents said they would call 911 for. So we're seeing people are not calling 911 for these serious symptoms. Very few people are calling 911 for vision problems, and people respond differently for the same symptom in themselves or another person. Now, in our multivariate models, we found that the factors that were associated with calling 911 differed depending on whether the symptom was in oneself or another often, and they differed by symptom. So if a person noticed that they themselves were speaking incorrectly, living with another adult, a history of hypertension, and prior experience with 911 were all independently associated with increased odds of calling 911 for speaking incorrectly. If somebody experienced another person speaking incorrectly, only living with another adult was independently associated with increased odds of calling 911. vision problems in oneself or another person was associated with delaying seeking care in the past. Persons who have reported that in the past they delayed seeking care had lower odds of calling 911 for vision problems in themselves or another person. For arm weakness, again, delaying seeking care showed up as being associated with lower odds of care seeking, calling 911. And the history of coronary heart disease in oneself was associated with increased odds of calling 911 for arm weakness in oneself. Respondents who were older than 65-year-old had lower odds of calling 911 in response to arm weakness in another person, and lower odds if they had some college education. So that was less than a bachelor's degree, but some college. High school graduate or less, so a maximum of a high school education, was independently associated with increased odds of calling 911 if another person had arm weakness, as was a history of coronary heart disease. And for facial droop, which we asked again, only in another person, older adults had lower odds of calling 911 in response to the symptom. So overall, we realized that our results showed that delaying care in the past was associated with people being less likely to call 911 for stroke symptoms, as was older adults. Prior experience with 911 was associated with increased odds, so people were more likely to call 911 for stroke symptoms if they had done so in the past. We found few differences based on health history, and the variables that were included in our health history questions were those that were putting people at higher risk. And we found no difference based on race or ethnicity. Given that we had a highly educated, primarily white, female, and insured population, our results may not be generalizable to everybody. We were also limited by the phone survey. Phone surveys are notoriously known for low response rates, but our rates were comparable to what is seen elsewhere. And our methodology did not allow us to measure actual behavior. We were limited to intention, but behavioral theories do support that intention is predictive of behavior. We had a large sample. It was definitely a strength of our study. Our response rates, as I mentioned, were comparable to most national telephone surveys. We used standardized strategies for sampling, and we used non-leading questions. Other studies had asked, what would you do if somebody had a stroke? Well, everyone knows stroke means emergency call 911. We didn't ask that. We just provided symptoms. And we didn't ask people to spontaneously recall what stroke symptoms were, which was the other thing we found in the results. So that lends some strength to the work. Our findings suggest that interventions need to be developed that are going to increase awareness of stroke symptoms and the need to call 911, and that they should target people who've delayed care in the past, older adults, persons living alone, and those at increased risk, because we're finding that that wasn't related. Okay. And the differences that we saw in response and factors related really reinforce the need to evaluate interventions so we know what is actually modifying and changing them. And in conclusion, I'd like to acknowledge the New York State Department of Health, Bureau of Health Risk Reduction, who funded this work. Thank you. With a half a minute to spare.